HD is most valuable if done in the first day or two of life to pick up conditions that can make a baby very sick by day three or four. Take care of business. The filing of a birth certificate is usually taken care of by hospital staff. If you're planning to give birth at home, you or your birth attendant will need to be responsible for the paperwork. Contact your state's Office of Vital Records and Statistics for information on how to file a birth certificate. Schedule baby's first doctor appointment, STAT. Be sure to contact your pediatrician immediately after birth to arrange an appointment for your baby as soon as possible.
Newborn hearing screening. Babies learn everything about their environment from their senses, from the sight of daddy's smiling face to the feel of warm skin as they're cradled in loving arms, to mommy's familiar scent to the sound of her voice as she matches coo for coo. But for approximately 2 to 4 out of every 1,000 babies born in the United States, the sense of hearing, so integral to the development of speech and language skills, is impaired. Since a hearing deficit can affect so many aspects of a young child's development, early diagnosis and treatment is key, which is why the AAP and the CDC recommend universal screening of newborns for hearing loss before they leave the hospital, and most states require it. Currently, about 97% of infants are tested. Not sure whether your baby has been tested, and if so, what the results were? Ask before discharge. Giving birth at home or at a facility that doesn't offer infant hearing screening? Make sure you get your newborn screened as soon as possible. Newborn hearing screening tests are highly effective. One test, called autoacoustic emissions, OAE, measures response to sound by using a small probe inserted in the baby's ear canal. In babies with normal hearing, a microphone inside the probe records faint noises coming from the baby's ear in response to a noise produced by the probe. This test can be done while the baby is sleeping, is completed within a few minutes, and causes no pain or discomfort. A second screening method, called auditory brainstem response, ABR, uses electrodes placed on baby's scalp to detect activity in the brainstem's auditory region in response to clicks sounded in the baby's ear. ABR screening requires the baby to be awake and in a quiet state, but it is also quick and painless. If your baby doesn't pass the initial screening, the test will be repeated to avoid false positive results. Don't forget to cover your baby. With insurance, that is. One of the many calls you'll need to make after the birth of your baby will be to your health insurance company, so your new arrival can be added to your policy, something that doesn't happen automatically. Some insurance carriers require that they be notified within 30 days of the birth of a baby. Having a baby on the policy will ensure that those doctor's visits will be covered right from the start. Don't have insurance? Want to change plans? Since having a baby qualifies you for a special enrollment period, you can enroll in or change marketplace coverage. Feeding your baby. Getting started, formula feeding.
There's not much you need to learn about feeding your baby a bottle, and not much your baby needs to learn either. Newborns have little trouble figuring out how to suck from an artificial nipple. But while breast milk is always on tap and ready to serve, formula must be selected, purchased, sometimes prepared, and often stored. And that means you'll need a lot of know-how before you mix up that first baby bottle. Whether you're formula feeding exclusively or just supplementing, here's what you'll need to know to get started. Selecting a formula. Formula can't replicate nature's recipe for breast milk precisely. For instance, it can't pass along mama's antibodies, but it does come pretty close. Today's formulas are made with types and proportions of proteins, fats, carbohydrates, sodium, vitamins, minerals, water, and other nutrients similar to breast milk's, and must meet standards set by the FDA. So just about any iron-containing formula you choose for your baby will be nutritionally sound. Still, the vast selection of formulas on store shelves can be dizzying. and more than a little confusing. Before you contemplate that selection, consider the following formula facts. Your baby's doctor knows a thing or two about formula. In your search for the perfect formula for your precious bundle, whether you'll be using it as a supplement to breast milk or as baby's exclusive feed, start with a recommendation from the pediatrician. But for best results, look to your baby as well. Different formulas work well for different babies at different times. Coupled with the advice of the pediatrician, your baby's reaction to the formula you're feeding will help you assess what's best. Cow's milk formula is best for most babies. The majority of formulas are made with cow's milk that has been modified to meet the nutritional and digestive needs of human babies. Regular cow's milk is a no-go until the first birthday. Organic formulas made from milk products untouched by growth hormones, antibiotics, and pesticides are readily available, if at a premium price. Iron fortified is always best. Formulas come in low iron formulations, but they aren't considered a healthy option. The AAP and most pediatricians recommend that babies be given iron fortified formula from birth until 1 year to prevent anemia. Special formulas are best for some babies. Vegan parents can select soy-based formula for their babies. There are also formulas available for premature babies, babies who have a hard time digesting regular formula, babies who turn out to be allergic to cow's milk and or soy, babies who are lactose intolerant, colicky babies, and babies with metabolic disorders such as PKU. For some babies, these formulas are easier to digest than standard formulations. But not surprisingly, they're much more expensive. Follow-ups are not always best. Follow-up formulas are designed for babies older than 4 months who are also eating solid foods. Most doctors don't recommend them. As regular formula, plus a healthy diet once solids are introduced, provide all the nutrients your little one needs until he or she is a year old, when you can switch to cow's milk. No toddler formula needed. Check with your baby's doctor before using follow-up formula. Once you've narrowed your selection down to a general type, you'll need to choose between ready-to-use. Pre-mixed ready-to-go formula comes in 2, 4, 6, and 8-ounce single-serving bottles and is ready for baby with a simple addition of a bottle nipple. It doesn't get easier and more convenient than this, especially because the unopened bottles don't need to be refrigerated. But this is definitely the priciest option. Ready to pour. Available in cans or plastic containers of various sizes, this liquid formula need only to be poured into the bottle to be ready for use. It's less expensive than single-serve feedings, but the formula left in the container needs to be stored properly and used within 48 hours. You'll also pay more for the convenience of ready-to-pours than you would for formulas that need to be mixed. Concentrated liquid. Less expensive than ready-to-pour, but a little more time-consuming to prepare, this concentrated liquid is diluted with equal parts water to make the finished formula. Powder. The least expensive option, if a bit more time-consuming, powdered formula is reconstituted with a specified amount of water. It's available in cans, plastic containers, or single-serving packets. Besides the low cost, another compelling reason to opt for powder, at least when you're out and about with baby, is that it doesn't need to be refrigerated until it's mixed. Look for bottles that allow you to keep fresh water and formula powder separate until you mix them together.
Formulas of formula. With so many types of formula on the market, choosing the right one for your little one can be a confusing proposition, whether you'll be feeding formula exclusively or as part of the breast bottle combo. Here's a rundown of varieties you'll see on the store shelves or online shopping portals. If you're considering trying a specialty formula, say one that's soy-based, Ask the doctor before you stock up. Milk-based formulas. The vast majority of babies do well on standard milk-based formulas. And that even goes for those babies who end up being fussy, most babies are, or have colic. Most of the time, cow's milk formula can't be blamed for those symptoms. Still, some babies with mild tummy troubles seem to do better on cow's milk-based sensitive formulas geared to lactose-sensitive infants, in which the milk proteins are easier to digest. Ask the doctor about switching to a sensitive formula if your baby seems to be especially gassy on standard milk-based formula. Just keep in mind that the much higher price may be hard for you to swallow. These formulas are more costly. Soy-based formulas. Formula made with soy proteins are plant-based and don't contain lactose, the sugar found in milk. It's the formula alternative for vegan families and may also be recommended for some babies who have certain metabolic disorders, such as galactosemia or congenital lactase deficiency. If your baby ends up having a true allergy to cow's milk formula, it's unlikely the doctor will recommend a soy-based one, because many babies who are allergic to cow's milk are allergic to soy milk as well. Hydrolysate formulas will be a better bet. Protein hydrolysate-based formulas. In these formulas, the protein is broken down into small parts that are easier for your baby to digest. That's why they're often called pre-digested formulas. These hypoallergenic formulas are recommended for babies who have true allergies to milk protein, and possibly for those with skin rashes, like eczema, or wheezing caused by allergies. But don't change your baby's formula to hydrolysate without the doctor's advice. Preemies may also need a hydrolyzed formula if they have trouble absorbing nutrients. If a specialized preemie formula isn't recommended, that is. These formulas are also more expensive than standard milk formulas. Hydrolysate-based formulas also have a very different taste and smell, which many babies and their parents find unpleasant, making a switch difficult for finicky infants, though some babies have no trouble chugging it down. Elemental formulas. These amino acid-based formulas are for infants who can't tolerate hydrolyzed formulas. Elemental formulas are milk-free and consist of non-allergenic amino acids, the building blocks of proteins. Since a typical allergic reaction is to a protein, it is very unlikely that a baby will have an allergic reaction to an elemental formula, making it the best choice for babies with milk and soy allergies. Lactose-free formulas. If your baby is lactose intolerant, or if he or she has galactosemia or congenital lactase deficiency, the doctor might recommend a lactose-free formula instead of soy-based, sensitive, or hydrolysate ones. These are cow's milk-based formulas that are completely free of lactose. Reflux formulas. Reflux formulas are pre-thickened with rice starch and are usually recommended only for babies with reflux who are not gaining weight. Sometimes a doctor will also recommend a reflux formula for a baby whose reflux is causing very uncomfortable symptoms, not just standard spitting up. Preemie formulas. Babies who were born early and or at a low birth weight sometimes need more calories, protein, and minerals than a regular formula can provide. The doctor may recommend a special type of preemie formula, many of which also contain a more easily absorbed type of fat, called medium-chain triglycerides, MCT, for your tiny baby. Supplementation formulas. Doing the combo? Breastfeeding and supplementing? There is formula designed specifically for supplementing breastfed babies. It contains important nutrients found in breast milk, as well as more prebiotics than other formulas, to help keep your baby's stool soft and seedy, like breastfeeding baby's poop. There are also other specially developed formulas for babies with heart disease, malabsorption syndromes, and problems digesting fat or processing certain amino acids. How much formula? How much formula does your baby need? Start your newborn out slowly. For the first week or so, your baby will probably take about 1 or 2 ounces at each feeding, every 3 to 4 hours or on demand. Gradually up the ounces, adding more as the demand becomes greater, but never push baby to take more than he or she wants. After all, pushing can lead to overfeeding, which can eventually lead to overweight, It can also lead to overflow in the form of excessive spitting up. After all, your baby's tummy is the size of his or her fist, not yours. Put too much in the tummy and it's bound to come back up.
Bottle feeding safely. For the safest formula prepping and feeding, always check the use-by date on formula, not only when you buy it, but when you prepare it. Don't purchase or use expired formula. And steer clear of dented, leaky, or otherwise damaged cans or other containers. Wash your hands thoroughly before preparing formula. If necessary, use a clean punch-type opener to open cans of liquid formula, making two openings on opposite sides of the can to make pouring easier. Wash the opener after each use. Most powdered formula cans come with special pull-open tops, making the use of a can opener unnecessary. If you're using a single serving bottle, make sure you hear the top pop when you open it. It isn't necessary to sterilize the water used to mix formula by boiling it. If you're unsure about the safety of your tap water, or if you use well water that hasn't been purified, have your supply tested and, if necessary, purified. Or just use filtered water. Also ask your baby's doctor if fluoride levels in your area's tap water are appropriate for baby. Here's another step you can save. Bottles and nipples don't need to be sterilized with special equipment. Dishwashers or sink washing with detergent and hot water get them clean enough. If your baby's doctor does recommend sterilizing for any reason, it's easy to do. Just submerge the bottles and nipples in a pot of boiling water for 5 minutes, then let them air dry. But here's a step you should never skip. Follow the manufacturer's directions precisely when mixing formula. Always check cans to see if formula needs to be diluted. Diluting a formula that shouldn't be diluted or not diluting one that should be could be dangerous. Formula that is too weak can stunt growth. Formula that is too strong can lead to an electrolyte imbalance, aka salt poisoning. Bottle warming is a matter of taste, namely babies. There is absolutely no health reason to warm formula before feeding. But babies who get accustomed to having their formula served up warm often come to expect it that way. That's why you might consider starting your baby out on formula that's been mixed with room temperature water, or even a bottle right out of the fridge, so he or she gets used to it that way. Then you can save yourself the time and the hassle of warming bottles, something you'll especially appreciate in the middle of the night or when your baby's frantic for a feed. If you do plan to serve a bottle warm, use a bottle warmer or place the bottle in a pot or bowl of hot water or run hot water over it. Check the temperature of the formula frequently by shaking a few drops on your inner wrist. It'll be ready for baby when it no longer feels cool to the touch. It shouldn't be very warm, just body temperature. Once it's warmed, use the formula immediately, since bacteria multiply rapidly at lukewarm temperatures. Never heat formula in a microwave oven. The liquid may warm unevenly, or the container may remain cool when the formula has gotten hot enough to burn baby's mouth or throat. Throw out any formula that's left in the bottle for longer than 1 hour after a feeding has started. Once baby has fed from a bottle of formula, bacteria can grow in it, even if it's refrigerated. So as tempting as it might be, don't reuse leftover formula. Cover open cans or bottles of liquid formula tightly and store in the refrigerator for no longer than the time specified on the labels. Usually 48 hours. Mark with the day and time you opened it so you don't lose track. Open cans of powdered formula should be covered and stored in a cool, dry place for use within a month. Store unopened cans or bottles of liquid formula at temperatures between 55 degrees Fahrenheit and 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Don't use unopened liquid that has been kept for long periods at or below 32 degrees Fahrenheit or in direct heat above 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Also, don't freeze formula or use formula that has been frozen or that shows white specks or streaks, even after shaking. Keep prepared bottles of formula refrigerated until ready to use. If you're traveling away from home, store previously prepared bottles in an insulated container or in a tightly sealed plastic bag with a small ice pack or a dozen ice cubes. The formula will stay fresh as long as most of the ice is frozen. Don't use pre-mixed formula that's no longer cold to the touch. It'll have to be tossed. Easier options on the go. Take along ready-to-use single-serving bottles of formula, bottles of water, and single-serving formula packets to mix with them, or bottles that have separate compartments to keep the powder and water apart until you're ready to combine them and feed your baby.
Do add-ins add up? Added in to more and more formulas are more and more ingredients that breast milk has always come by naturally. Among them, DHA, ARA, and lutein nutrients that enhance mental and visual development in infants, and probiotics and or prebiotics, which may promote better digestion and perhaps boost a baby's immune system. Talk to your baby's doctor about which add-ins add up for your little one.
Bottle feeding basics. Need to bone up on bottle feeding. Whether you'll be feeding formula exclusively, combining it with breast, or using bottles to serve up express breast milk, these step-by-step tips should help. Give notice. Let baby know that milk's on by stroking his or her cheek with your finger or the tip of the nipple. That will encourage your baby to root. Turn in the direction of the stroke. Then place the nipple gently between baby's lips, and hopefully sucking will begin. If baby still doesn't get the picture, a drop of formula on those sweet lips should clue him or her in. Make air the enemy. Tilt the bottle so that formula always fills the nipple completely. If you don't, and air fills part of it, baby will be chasing formula down with air, a recipe for gassiness, which will make both of you miserable. Anti-air precautions aren't necessary, however, if you're using disposable bottle liners, which automatically deflate, eliminating air pockets, or if you're using specially designed bottles that keep the formula pooled near the nipple. Keeping baby propped up in your arms instead of lying horizontal can also help. Start slow. Brand new babies have minimal nutritional needs in their first few days of life, which is good because they also have minimal appetite. They're usually more eager to sleep than feed. That's why nature's food delivery system makes so much sense. Just a teaspoon or so of colostrum is served up at each feed until mama's milk arrives. And why, if you're delivering those first feeds via bottle, you can expect your newborn will only take tiny amounts of formula. The hospital will probably provide you with 2-ounce bottles, but it's unlikely your little one will drain them at first. Break for bubbles. A baby who falls asleep after taking just a 1/2 ounce or so is probably saying, "I've had enough." On the other hand, if baby doesn't fall asleep, but turns away from the bottle fussily after just a few minutes of nipping, it's more likely a matter of gas than overfilling. In that case, don't give up without a bubble. If after a good burping, baby still won't budge on the bottle, take that as your signal that the meal is over. Check your speed. Be certain that formula isn't coming through the nipple too quickly or too slowly. Nipples are available in different sizes for babies of different sizes and ages. A newborn nipple dispenses milk more slowly, which is usually perfect for a baby who's just getting the hang of sucking and whose appetite is still tender. Ditto for nipples designed to mimic breastfeeding. They're also slower flow. You can check the speed of the nipples you're using by turning the bottle upside down and giving it a few quick shakes. If milk pours or spurts out, it's flowing too quickly. If just a drop or two escapes, too slowly. If you get a little spray and then some drops, the flow is just about right. But the very best way to test the flow is by observing the little mouth it's flowing into. If there's a lot of gulping and sputtering going on, and milk is always dripping out of the corners of baby's mouth, the flow is too fast. If baby seems to work very hard at sucking for a few moments, then seems frustrated, possibly letting go of the nipple to complain, the flow is too slow. Sometimes a flow problem has less to do with the size of the nipple than with the way the cap is fastened. A very tight cap inhibits flow by creating a partial vacuum, so loosening it up a bit may make the formula flow more freely. Let baby call it quits. When it comes to feedings, your baby's the boss. If you see only 1 ounce has been emptied when the usual meal is 2, don't be tempted to push the rest. A healthy baby knows when to keep feeding and when to stop. And it's this kind of pushing that often leads bottle-fed babies to become too plump, much more often than breastfed babies who naturally eat to appetite. Minimize midnight hassles. If you can afford the premium price, consider using ready-to-serve single-serving bottles at night. Just keep them bedside along with clean nipples, so you can skip the midnight bottle prep. Or use a bottle that stores water and formula powder separately. Or invest in a bedside bottle holder, which keeps baby's bottle safely chilled until ready to use, and then warms it to room temperature in minutes. Bottle feeding with love. Whether you've chosen to feed your baby exclusively with formula or to mix it up with breast, the most important ingredient in any feeding session is love. The kind of skin-to-skin, eye-to-eye contact that's linked to optimum brain development and attachment in a newborn is a built-in feature of breastfeeding. But it can easily be added to bottle feeding. To make sure you keep in touch with your baby while you're bottle feeding, don't prop the bottle. It may be the easy thing to do, propping the bottle so you can tackle the bills or catch up on Facebook, but it's definitely not a good thing. Not only does propping your baby's bottle mean that you'll both be missing out on quality cuddle time, it increases the risk of choking, even if your baby is in a reclining high chair or infant seat. Ear infections, and once those pearly whites come in, tooth decay. Go skin to skin when you can. There are piles of research showing the piles of benefits provided by sharing skin to skin contact with a newborn, including the fact that so-called kangaroo care lifts levels of oxytocin, aka the love hormone, which plays a major role in parent-baby bonding. But you won't need scientists to prove what you'll discover the first time you go skin to skin with your baby, that it feels warm, cozy, and generally awesome for you both. So whenever you can, go ahead, open your shirt, and nestle your baby close to you when you bottle feed. To cocoon your cutie even more snugly, tuck his or her body under your shirt or sweatshirt. There are even kangaroo care tops made specifically for skin-to-skin wear. That goes for daddies, too. Your baby will love to cuddle cheek to chest. And yes, even cheek to chest hair. Switch arms. Breastfeeding also builds in this feature. Alternating breasts means alternating arms. But with bottle feeding, you'll have to remember to switch. A switch mid-feeding serves two purposes. First, it gives your baby a chance to see the world from different perspectives. Second, it gives you a chance to relieve the aches that can develop from staying in one position for so long. Take your time. A nursing baby can keep suckling on a breast long after it's been drained, just for comfort and sucking satisfaction. Your bottle-fed baby can't do the same with an empty bottle, but there are ways you can supply some of the same satisfactions. Extend the pleasure of the feeding session by chatting, singing, or cooing to your baby once the bottle is drained, assuming he or she hasn't dropped off into a milk-induced sleep. The sound of your voice is like music to your baby's ears and makes the feeding session even more special. If your baby doesn't seem satisfied with the amount of sucking each feeding is providing, try using nipples with smaller holes or slower flow, which will ensure that your baby will get to suck longer for the same meal. Or finish off feedings by offering a pacifier. If your baby seems to be rooting around for more at meal's end, consider whether you're offering enough formula. Increase feeds by an ounce or two to see if it's really hunger that's making your baby fussy. The formula for a happy baby. Whether you'll be formula feeding your baby exclusively or combining bottle with breast, whether you opted for formula from the beginning or turned to the bottle after a rocky start with breastfeeding, either for you or for baby, feel good about formula feeding. Remember, breast is best, but filled with the right formula and given the right way, a bottle passes along good nutrition and lots of love. Definitely a formula for a happy, healthy baby.
What you may be wondering about.
Birth weight.
My friends all seem to be having babies who weigh 8 and 9 pounds at birth. Mine weighed in at a little over 6.5 pounds at full term. She's healthy, but she seems so small.
Just like healthy grown-ups, healthy babies come in all kinds of packages. Long and lanky, big and bulky, slight and slender. And more often than not, a baby can thank the grown-ups in her life for her birth stats and her future stats. After all, the laws of genetics dictate that large parents generally have large babies who become large grown-ups, while small parents generally have small babies who become small grown-ups. When dad's large and mom's small, or the other way around, their little ones can be little, big, or somewhere in between. Mom's own birth weight can also influence her offspring's. If she was born small, her baby's more likely to arrive that way too. Still another factor is a baby's sex. Girls tend to weigh in lighter and measure up shorter than boys do. And though there is a laundry list of other factors that can affect a baby's size at birth, such as how much weight mom gained during pregnancy, the only factor that matters now is that your baby is completely healthy, and likely every bit as healthy as any newborn chubster. Keep in mind, too, that some babies who start out small quickly outpace their peers on the growth charts as they start catching up to their genetic potential. In the meantime, enjoy your sweet little bundle while she's still a relatively light load. It won't be long before just hearing the words, "carry me," from your strapping preschooler will make your back start aching. Was your baby born small for her gestational age? Check out Chapter 21 for information on low birth weight babies. Weight loss.
I expected my baby to lose some weight in the hospital, but he dropped from 7.5 pounds to just over 7 pounds. Isn't that a lot to lose?
Not to worry. Nearly all newborns check out of the hospital weighing considerably less than when they checked in. In fact, thanks to normal post-delivery fluid loss, babies lose an average of 5 to 10% of their birth weight within the first 5 days of life. That loss, essentially water weight, is not immediately recouped, since brand new babies initially need and take in very little food. Breastfed babies who consume only teaspoons of colostrum in those early days of feeding may lose even more weight than formula-fed babies and may be slower to regain it, which again is nothing to worry about. Happily, your newborn is likely to stop losing weight by the time he's 5 days old and to have regained or surpassed his birth weight by 10 to 14 days, at which point you'll be able to start posting those weight gain bulletins. Baby's appearance.
People ask me whether the baby looks like his mom or his dad. Not sure what to say, since neither one of us has a pointy head, puffy eyes, an ear that bends forward, and a pushed-in nose.
If you've ever wondered why 2- and 3-month-olds are used to play newborns on TV, you've just discovered a key reason. Most babies aren't exactly born photogenic. Beautiful to their parents, of course, but not nearly ready for their close-ups. Instead, most newborns, especially those who arrive vaginally, C-section babies definitely have an edge in appearance, have a few wrinkles to work out first, not to mention some puffiness. As you probably already guessed, the features you're describing weren't inherited from some distant pointy-headed, puffy-eyed, flap-eared relative. They were picked up during your baby's stay in the cramped quarters of your water-filled uterus and during the tight squeeze through your bony pelvis and birth canal during labor and delivery. Let's break down those features, starting with your precious bundle's unexpectedly pointy head. Believe it or not, nature has your baby's back, if not his just-born looks, in the miraculous design of the fetal head. Since the bones of the skull aren't yet fully formed, a baby's head can be pushed and molded as he's making his descent to and through the exit, allowing for a vaginal birth in most cases, something that wouldn't be possible if his skull were unyielding. That's the upside. The very temporary downside, being a conehead for a few days or so, after which his head will return to cherubic roundness. Good thing baby beanies are part of the hospital ensemble, right? The swelling around your baby's eyes is also due, at least in part, to the rough road he took on his fantastic voyage into the world. Another contributing factor might be the antibiotic ointment placed in those precious peepers at birth. And here's one more thought. Some experts speculate that this swelling serves as natural protection for newborns whose eyes are being exposed to light for the first time. No matter what the cause, puffiness too is temporary, lasting just a few days. In the meantime, don't worry that it might interfere with your baby's ability to see mommy and daddy. Though he can't yet distinguish one from another, a newborn can make out blurry faces at birth, even through swollen lids. The bent ear probably also comes courtesy of the cozy but crowded conditions your baby experienced in his uterine home. As the fetus grows and becomes more snugly lodged in his mother's amniotic sac, an ear that happens to get pushed forward may stay that way, even after birth. Again, it's only temporary, and it won't interfere with his being able to hear or recognize the sweet music of your voices. The pushed-in nose that may make him look a little bit like a baby boxer is also very likely the result of going a long round in your narrow birth canal. It too should return to its genetic blueprint. Just remember, baby noses are still a work in progress. Even once your little guy's nose is back to baby normal, the bridge may be broad, almost non-existent, and the shape often nondescript, making it very different from the nose he'll sport as an adult, and meaning it may be a while before you'll know whose nose he has.
For parents, meeting, greeting, and bonding. Not only do freshly delivered newborns come equipped with all their senses, they arrive ready to roll them out, to gaze into their parents' eyes, to hear mommy's already familiar voice and identify her uniquely mommy scent, to feel those loving snuggles, to taste that first sip from breast or bottle. They're also extra alert in the hour right after birth, which makes this an especially good time for that first official get-together with their parents, the first cuddle, the first nursing, the first skin-to-skin and eye-to-eye contact. And for parents, well, after 9 months of waiting, that first meet-and-greet is an eagerly anticipated chance to start getting to know their little one, to soak it all in, that flood of emotions and sensations and realizations and expectations and to start bonding with the newest member of their family. But what happens if those first moments after birth are nothing but a blur, either because labor was long and hard, delivery was difficult, or baby had to be whisked away quickly for extra care, or you just weren't feeling what you thought you'd be feeling? Does missing those moments or not being able to make the most of them or not appreciating them as much as you'd hoped you would matter? Absolutely not. Just remember, meeting and greeting your baby, whether it's just after birth or hours later, may be a momentous moment, but it's just one of many you'll spend getting to know each other. Yes, it's important, but no more important than the moments and hours and weeks and days and years that lie ahead. A new beginning for sure, but really, only the beginning.
Eye ointment.
Why does my newborn have ointment in his eyes? And how long will it blur his vision?
There are a lot of factors standing between a newborn baby and a clear view of his surroundings. His eyes are puffy from delivery, still adjusting to the bright lights of the outside world after spending 9 months in a dark womb, naturally nearsighted, and as you've noticed, gooey with ointment. But the ointment serves an important purpose that makes a little increased blurriness well worthwhile. It's administered, as recommended by the AAP and mandated by most states, to prevent a gonococcal or chlamydial infection. Once a major cause of blindness, such infections have been virtually eliminated by this preventive treatment. The antibiotic ointment, usually erythromycin, is mild and not as potentially irritating to the eyes as the silver nitrate drops that were once the treatment of choice. The slight swelling and oozy blurriness of your newborn's eyes will last only a day or two. Tearing, swelling, or infection that begins after that may be caused by a blocked tear duct. Portrait of a newborn. They may be crowd pleasers, especially in a crowd of excited family and friends, but most freshly delivered babies aren't exactly the dimpled, round, button-nosed bundles of cuteness most parents expect to be handed. Taking it from the top, babies arrive top-heavy, with their heads looking too large for their body. That head takes up about one quarter of a baby's total length. If the trip through the birth canal was a particularly tight squeeze, that head may be somewhat molded, sometimes to the point of being pointy, even cone-shaped. A bruise might also have been raised on the scalp during delivery. Newborn hair may be limited to a sprinkling of fuzz or so full it looks like it's due for a trim. It may lie flat or stand up straight in spikes. When hair is sparse, blood vessels may be seen as a blue roadmap across baby's scalp, and the pulse may be visible at the soft spot, or fontanelle, on the top of the head. Many newborns appear to have gone a few rounds in the ring after a vaginal delivery. Their eyes may appear squinty because of the folds at the inner corners, swelling from delivery, and possibly because of the infection-protecting eye ointment scooping them up. Their eyes may also be bloodshot from the pressures of labor. The nose may be flattened and the chin unsymmetrical or pushed in from being squeezed through the pelvis, adding to the boxer-like appearance. Babies who arrive by cesarean, plucked neatly from the womb, often have a significant temporary edge in the looks department, especially if they didn't go through the compression of labor first. Because a newborn's skin is thin, it usually has a pale, pinkish cast, even in non-Caucasian babies, from the blood vessels just beneath it. Right after delivery, it's most often covered with the remains of the vernix caseosa, a cheesy coating that protects fetuses during the time spent soaking in the amniotic fluid. The earlier a baby arrives, the more vernix is left on the skin. Babies born late may have skin that's wrinkled or peeling because they had little or no vernix left to protect it. Babies born late are also less likely than early babies to be covered with lanugo, a downy prenatal fur that can appear on shoulders, back, forehead, and cheeks, and that disappears within the first few weeks of life. A baby's legs and arms, which haven't yet plumped up, may seem more chicken scrawny than squeezably chubby. And finally, because of an infusion of female hormones from the placenta just before birth, many babies, both boys and girls, have swollen breasts and/or genitals. There may even be a milky discharge from the breasts, and in girls, a vaginal discharge, sometimes bloody. Be sure to capture those newborn features quickly for your baby book or app, as if you'll need to be told to take some pictures, because they're all fleeting. Most are gone within the first few days, the rest within a few weeks, leaving nothing but darling, dimpled cuteness in their place. Bloodshot eyes.
Why do the whites of my baby's eyes look bloodshot?
It's not the late hours that newborns keep that often give their eyes that bloodshot look. No, that would be why your eyes will be looking so red for the next few months. Rather, it's a harmless condition that occurs when there is trauma to the eyeball, often in the form of broken blood vessels, during delivery. Like a skin bruise, the discoloration disappears in a few days and does not indicate there has been any damage to your baby's sweet peepers. By the way, the same can be said for new moms who put in a lot of pushing time and end up temporarily sporting broken blood vessels in and around their eyes. Eye color.
I was hoping my baby would have green eyes like her father, but her eyes seem to be a dark grayish color. Is there any chance that they'll turn?
Will it be baby blues, or browns, or greens, or hazels? It's definitely too early to call now. Most Caucasian babies are born with dark blue or slate-colored eyes, while most dark-skinned infants arrive with dark, usually brown eyes. While the dark eyes of the darker-skinned babies will usually stay dark, the eye color of Caucasian babies may go through a number of changes, keeping parents guessing before becoming set somewhere between 3 and 6 months, or even later. And since pigmentation of the iris may continue increasing during the entire first year, the depth of color may not be clear until around baby's first birthday. Baby sleepiness.
My baby seemed very alert right after she was born, but ever since she's been sleeping so soundly, I can hardly wake her to eat, much less to play with her.
9 long months of waiting to meet your baby. And now that she's here, all she does is sleep? As frustrating as it can be for new parents eager to engage with their little ones, chronic sleepiness is completely normal for brand new newborns. Not a reflection on your socializing skills, just a sign that baby's doing what comes naturally. An alert and wakeful first hour after birth, followed by a long stretch of pronounced drowsiness, as long as 24 hours, though she won't sleep for 24 hours straight, is the predictable pattern for newborns, probably designed to give babies a chance to recover from the hard work of being born, and their mothers a chance to recover from the hard work of giving birth. You will need to make sure that your baby fits feedings into her sleep schedule, however. Don't expect your newborn to become much more stimulating company once those 24 hours of sleepiness are over either. Here's approximately how you can expect it to go. In the first few weeks of life, her 2 to 4 hour long sleeping periods will end abruptly with crying. She'll rouse to a semi-awake state to eat, probably doing a fair amount of dozing while she's feeding. Shaking the nipple around in her mouth will get her sucking again when she drifts off mid-meal. Once she's full, she'll finally fall more soundly asleep, ready for yet another nap. At first, your little sleepyhead will be truly alert for only about 3 minutes of every hour during the day, and less, you hope, at night. A schedule that will allow for a total of about an hour a day for active socializing. Maybe not enough for you. After all, how long have you waited to try out your peekaboo prowess? But it's just what Mother Nature ordered for your baby. She's not mature enough to benefit from longer periods of alertness. And those periods of sleep, particularly of REM or dream state sleep, help her grow and develop. Gradually, your baby's periods of wakefulness will grow longer. By the end of the first month, she'll probably be alert for about 2 to 3 hours every day. Most of it in one relatively long stretch, usually in the late afternoon. Instead of being around the clock cycle, more of her sleep will be concentrated during her evening naps, which will begin to last longer. Instead of being 2 or 3 hours long, some may soon last as long as 6 or 6.5 hours. In the meantime, instead of standing over the bassinet waiting for her to wake for a play session, try hitting your own snooze button. Use her sleeping time to store up a few Z's of your own, which you'll need for the days and nights ahead, when she'll probably be awake more than you'd like.
For parents, rooming in. Full-time rooming in, the standard in nearly all hospitals and birthing centers, gives new parents a chance to get to know their newborns and get some hands-on baby care experience. It also makes it easy for new moms to breastfeed on demand, boosting the odds of ultimate breastfeeding success, and reduces the amount of crying and increases the amount of sleeping newborns do. Do new moms have a choice when it comes to rooming in? Often they don't. Many hospitals have eliminated well baby nurseries, making rooming in mandatory. And for most parents, eager to cash in on those long-awaited cuddles, that's just fine. But what happens if what sounded like a dream, baby cuddled in your arms for hours on end, ends up more of a nightmare? Baby's crying inexhaustibly, and you're just plain exhausted. Some hospitals still have nurseries and offer the option of keeping newborns between feeds. Others have unofficial policies of relieving sleepy moms for short periods of time if the nursing staff isn't too busy. If you need a break, an hour or two of uninterrupted sleep, or just a chance to rest up from childbirth, push that button now and ask if the nurse can take your newborn off your weary hands. You've earned it, you deserve it, and hopefully you'll get it. Just make sure that your baby is brought to you for feeds every 2 to 3 hours and not given any supplementary bottles if you're breastfeeding. Is round-the-clock rooming in with baby your only option? Fortunately, hospitals also accommodate rooming in for dads, so you can share baby care and take turns catching Z's right from the start. Dad's not available or is home with other kids? Enlist another family member or friend to bunk with you if you can.
Gagging.
My baby just gagged and then spit up some liquidy stuff, apparently out of nowhere since I hadn't nursed him recently. What could that be?
Your baby spent the last 9 months, more or less, living in a liquid environment where he didn't breathe air but did suck in a lot of fluid. Though his airways were probably suctioned within moments of delivery, additional mucus and fluid may have lingered in his lungs, especially if he was delivered via C-section and didn't have the tight squeeze through the birth canal to help squeeze out more of that mucus. That little bit of gagging is just his way of bringing the rest of that gunk up and out. In other words, it's perfectly normal and absolutely nothing to stress about. Empty breasts?
It's been 2 days since I gave birth to my baby girl, and nothing comes out of my breasts when I squeeze them. She's nursing fine, but I'm worried that she's starving.
Not only is your baby not starving, but she isn't even hungry yet. Infants aren't born with an appetite or even with immediate nutritional needs. And by the time your baby begins to get hungry for a breastful of milk, usually around the 3rd or 4th postpartum day, you'll almost certainly be able to serve it up. Which isn't to say that your breasts are empty now. They're dispensing colostrum, a pretty remarkable pre-milk that's custom-made for newborns. Colostrum not only provides your baby with all the nourishment she needs and wants right now,
but also with important antibodies her own body can't yet produce. And all of this while helping to empty her digestive system of meconium and excess mucus. But part of the genius of colostrum is how concentrated it is and how it provides all of those amazing benefits to your baby in tiny amounts. First feedings average less than half a teaspoon. And by the third day, they max out at less than 3 tablespoons per feeding. What's more, colostrum isn't that easy to express manually. In fact, even a day-old baby with no previous experience is better equipped to extract it than you are. Sleeping through meals.
The pediatrician says I should feed my baby every 2 to 3 hours, but sometimes he sleeps for 5 or 6. Should I wake him up to eat?
Some babies are perfectly content to sleep through meals, particularly during the first few days of life when they're more sleepy than hungry. But letting a sleeping baby lie through his feedings means that he won't be getting enough to eat. And if you're nursing, that your milk supply won't be getting the jump start it needs. If your baby is a sleepy baby, try these rousing techniques at mealtime. Choose the right sleep to wake him from. Baby will be much more easily roused during active or REM sleep. You'll know your baby is in this light sleep cycle. It takes up about 50% of his sleeping time when he starts moving his arms and legs, changing facial expressions, and fluttering his eyelids. Unwrap him. Sometimes just unswaddling your baby will wake him up. If it doesn't, undress him right down to the diaper, room temperature permitting, and try some skin-to-skin contact. Go for a change. Even if his diaper's not that wet, a change may be just the jolt he needs to wake him for his meal. Dim the lights. Though it may seem that turning on the high-voltage lamps might be the best way to jolt baby out of his slumber, it could have just the opposite effect. A newborn's eyes are sensitive to light, so if the room is too bright, your baby may be more comfortable keeping those peepers tightly shut. But don't turn the lights all the way off. A too dark room will only lull baby back off to dreamland. Try the doll's eyes technique. Holding a baby upright will usually cause his eyes to open, much as a doll's would. Gently raise your baby into an upright or sitting position and pat him on the back. Be careful not to jackknife him or fold him forward. Be sociable. Sing a lively song, talk to your baby, and once you get his eyes open, make eye contact with him. A little social stimulation may coax him to stay awake. Rub him the right way. Stroke the palms of your baby's hands and soles of his feet, and then massage his arms, back, and shoulders. Or do some baby aerobics. Move his arms and pump his legs in a bicycling motion. A great trick for releasing gas, too. If sleepyhead still won't rise to the feeding occasion, place a cool, not cold, washcloth on his forehead, or rub his face gently with the washcloth. Of course, getting baby up doesn't mean you'll be able to keep baby up, especially not after a few nips of sleep-inducing milk. A baby who's still drowsy may take the nipple, suckle briefly, then promptly fall back asleep, long before he's managed to make a meal of it. When this happens, try a burp. Whether baby needs a bubble or not, the jostling may rouse him again. A change, this time a feeding position. Whether you're nursing or bottle feeding, switch from the cradle hold to the football hold, which babies are less likely to sleep in. A dribble, some breast milk or formula dribbled on baby's lips may whet his appetite for his second course. A jiggle. Jiggling the breast or bottle in his mouth or stroking his cheek may get the sucking action going again, even if he's just doing it in his sleep. Babies often do. And repeat. Some young babies alternate sucking and dozing from the start of the meal to the finish, If that's the case with your baby, you may find you'll have to burp, change, dribble, and jiggle at least several times to get a full feeding in. It's fine to occasionally let your baby sleep when he's dropped off to dreamland after just a brief appetizer, and all efforts to tempt him into his entree have failed. But for now, don't let him go more than 3 hours without a full meal if he's nursing, or 4 hours if he's formula fed. It's also not a good idea to let your baby nip and nap at 15 to 30 minute intervals all day long. If that seems to be the trend, be relentless in your attempts to wake him when he dozes off during a feed. If chronic sleepiness interferes so much with eating that your baby isn't thriving, consult the doctor.
A newborn state of mind. It may seem to the casual observer or the brand new parent that infants have just three things on their minds: eating, sleeping, and crying, not necessarily in that order. But researchers have shown that infant behavior is actually at least twice as complex as that and can be organized into six states of consciousness. Watch carefully and you'll see what's on your newborn baby's mind. Quiet alert. This is a baby's secret agent state of mind. When babies are in quiet alert mode, their motor activity is suppressed, so they rarely move. Instead, they spend all their energy watching, with their eyes wide open, usually staring directly at someone, and listening intently. This behavior makes quiet alert the perfect time for one-on-one socializing. By the end of their first month, newborns typically spend 2.5 hours a day being quiet alert. Active alert. The motor's running when babies are in active alert, with arms moving and legs kicking. They may even make some small sounds. Though they'll be doing a lot of looking around in this state, they're more likely to focus on objects than on people. Your cue that baby's more interested in taking in the big picture than in doing any serious socializing. Babies are most often in this newborn state of mind before they eat or when they are borderline fussy. You may be able to preempt full-fledged fussiness at the end of an active alert period by feeding or doing some soothing rocking. Crying. This is, of course, the state newborns are best known for. Crying occurs when babies are hungry, gassy, uncomfortable, bored, not getting enough attention, or just plain unhappy. While crying, babies will contort their faces, move their arms and legs vigorously, and shut their eyes tightly. Drowsiness. Babies are in this state, not surprisingly, when they're waking up or nodding off to sleep. Drowsy babies will make some moves, such as stretching upon waking, and make a variety of adorable but seemingly incongruous facial gestures that can run the gamut from scowling to surprised to elated, but the eyelids are droopy and the eyes will appear dull, glazed, and unfocused. Quiet sleep. In quiet sleep, which alternates every 30 minutes with active sleep, your baby's face is relaxed, eyelids are closed and still. Body movement is rare, with just occasional startles or mouth movements, and breathing is very regular. Active sleep. The other half of your baby's sleep time is spent in an active sleep state. In this restless sleep state, which is actually a lot more restful for baby than it looks, eyes can often be seen moving under the closed lids, which is why active sleep is also known as REM, or rapid eye movement sleep. Arms and legs may do a lot of moving around too, as will that tiny mouth, which may make sucking or chewing motions, or, get ready to melt, even smile. Breathing isn't as regular during active sleep. A lot of brain development is going on. There's an increase in the manufacturing of nerve proteins and neural pathways, and experts believe the brain uses this time to learn and process information acquired while awake. Interestingly, preemies spend more of their time in REM sleep, possibly because their brains need more developing than full-termers. Wondering if your sweet little one is having sweet little dreams during his or her REM sleep? It's possible, but hard to know for sure. Some experts say that it's unlikely babies dream due to their limited pool of experiences and their immature brains. Others say babies are probably dreaming about what they've experienced so far in life: the taste of mommy's milk, the touch of dad's hands, the sound of the dog barking, faces baby has seen. For parents, Have you heard the one? You haven't even been a parent for 48 hours yet, and already you've been on the receiving end of so much conflicting advice on everything from umbilical stump care to feeding that your head's in a tailspin. The hospital staff tells you one thing, or maybe two things, if you want to count the day nurse and the night nurse. Your sister, veteran of two newborns, has a completely different take. Both clash with what you seem to recall baby's pediatrician telling you and what you just read on your message board. And let's not even get started on your mother and your mother-in-law. So what's a confused new parent to do and believe? The fact is that the facts about baby care, at least the most up-to-date facts, aren't easy to sort out, especially when everyone and their mother is telling you something different. Your best bet when all that contradicting counsel leaves you in doubt about how best to care for your newborn, or when you need a deciding vote you can count on, stick with the doctor's advice. Of course, in listening to others, even the pediatrician, don't forget that you've got another valuable resource you can trust, your own instincts. Often parents, even the really green ones, do know best, and usually much more than they think they do.
Nonstop feeding. I'm afraid my baby is going to turn into a little blimp almost immediately after I put her down. She's up, crying to be fed again. Feed your newborn every time she cries, and baby blimpdom definitely could be on the horizon. After all, babies cry for many other reasons besides hunger, and it may be that you're misreading her signals by serving up a feed each time she fusses. Sometimes crying is a baby's way of unwinding for a few minutes before she falls asleep. Put her back to the breast or bottle, and you may not just be overfeeding her, but also interrupting her efforts to settle down for a nap. Sometimes crying after a feed may be a cry for companionship, a signal that baby's in the mood for some socializing, not another meal. Sometimes crying signals that baby is craving more sucking satisfaction than her meal provided, which means a passy may pacify her, or that she may be having trouble calming herself down, in which case a little rocking and a few soft lullabies may be just what she's fussing for. And sometimes it's just a simple matter of gas, which more feeding would only compound. Bringing up the bubble may bring her the contentment she's craving. If you've ruled out all of the above scenarios, as well as done a quick check for a dirty or uncomfortably wet diaper, and your baby's still crying, then consider that perhaps she really hasn't gotten enough to eat. Maybe she's settled into a snack and snooze habit, drifting off to sleep before she fully fills her belly, and then waking quickly for a second serving, in which case the trick will be keeping her awake until she's finished the feed. Or maybe a growth spurt has temporarily sent her appetite into overdrive, and she's letting you know her needs. Healthy babies, after all, usually know exactly how much feed they need, even if their parents don't always. Breastfed babies may feed more often, too, when they're trying to pump up mommy's milk supply, and they usually succeed within a few days. But if your baby is breastfeeding, seems chronically hungry, but doesn't seem to be thriving, she's not gaining weight fast enough, or filling her diapers like she should, you may not be producing enough milk.
Tips for successful feeding sessions. Whether it's a breast or a bottle that will be your newborn's ticket to a full tummy, the guidelines that follow should help make the trip a smoother one. Zero in on Zen. While you're both learning the ropes, you and your baby will have to focus on the feeding, and the fewer distractions from that job, the better. Turn off the TV. Soft music is fine. Let the phone go to voicemail at baby's mealtimes and silence those texts and tweets. If you have other children, chances are you'll already be pretty proficient at feeding. The challenge will be keeping your older ones and your new one happy at the same time. Try diverting the older sib set with some quiet activity, like coloring, that they can settle down with at your side, or take this opportunity to read them a story. Make a change. If your baby is relatively calm, you've got time for a change. A clean diaper will make for a more comfortable meal and less need for a change right after. A definite plus if your baby has nodded off to destination dreamland. But don't change before middle of the night feedings if baby's only damp. Sopping's another story. Since all that stimulation makes falling back to sleep more difficult, especially for infants who are mixing up their days and nights. Does your sleepy head have trouble staying up for a whole feed? Then changing mid-feed might provide just the jolt he or she needs to get that feed finished. Wash up. Even though you won't be doing the eating, it's your hands that should be washed with soap and water before your baby's meals. Get comfy. Aches and pains are an occupational hazard for new parents using unaccustomed muscles to tote growing babies around. Feeding baby in an awkward position will only compound the problem. So before putting baby to breast or bottle, be sure you're set up comfortably with adequate support both for your back and neck and for the arm under baby. Loosen up. If your baby is tightly swaddled, unwrap that bundle so you can cuddle, preferably skin to skin, while you feed. Cool down a fired up baby. A baby who's already worked up will have trouble settling down to the business of feeding, and even more trouble with the business of digesting. Try a soothing song or a little rocking first. Sound reveille. Some babies are sleepy at mealtimes, especially in the early days. If your little one is a dinner dozer, try the wake-up techniques we discussed earlier in this chapter. Break for a burp. Midway through each feeding,